KLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Some 30 million Americans across the South now on alert for severe weather. Some communities recovering from storms and possible tornadoes. ABC News Chief Meteorologist Ginger Z.
This is super rare for this time of year in this part of the country for the subtropical jet stream to be this active. Underneath it, huge heat dome that has been prolonged and dangerous. It'll take heat indices in parts of Texas up to 118 through the weekend.
Portions of Georgia, Florida, and Alabama under a tornado watch till 11 p.m. Federal Reserve is leaving interest rates unchanged after a string of 10 consecutive increases, but Fed Chair Jerome Powell hinted two more rate increases are possible this year. A day after former President Trump entered a not guilty plea to federal charges on how he handled classified documents, lawmakers are reacting to the case.
We've lost three elections in a row now. He's been the issue in every one of those elections.
Republican Senator John Thune of South Dakota. This is ABC News. One lobbying group wants doctors to stop emphasizing the use of body mass index when discussing weight with patients.
The American Medical Association is out with new guidance on BMI, body mass index, and how doctors use it to treat their patients. ABC News medical contributor Dr. Darian Sutton says it leaves out a lot of important factors.
It doesn't account for body composition, muscle mass, as well as other factors of health that include cholesterol, blood pressure. And it obviously doesn't account for racial differences in genetics that exists in our diverse populations today.
Body mass index, which is calculated simply by using your height and your weight. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Hate is a danger to everyone. That's from the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who is calling for member countries to rein in online hate speech. A morgue manager at Harvard Medical School faces federal indictment. The manager accused of stealing, selling, and shipping donated cadaver body parts that were meant for educational purposes. Andy Field, ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. An air quality advisory has been issued for all of northwestern and central Wisconsin through noon tomorrow. Wildfire smoke from Canada is pushing down into the upper Midwest, including Wisconsin, with current air quality unhealthy for children and people with certain medical conditions. The state high school baseball championships continue today in Grand Chute. In the Division III semifinals this morning, both St. Croix Falls and Aquinas won 10-0 in six innings. They'll face each other tomorrow at noon for the Division III championship. The Division IV semifinals were last night, with both Ithaca and Pecatonica advancing with one-run wins. The Division II and Division I semifinals are in progress throughout this evening, and their championship games are tomorrow evening as well. And in Sauk County, it's the third day of searching for missing 13-year-old James Yablonski, who was last seen near the Baraboo Bluffs, or about 2 miles from Devil's Lake State Park. The DNR and multiple law enforcement agencies are searching the woods. Anyone with information is asked to call the Sauk County Sheriff's Office. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
More than 130,000 car accidents occur in Wisconsin each year. If you're in an accident and experience any injuries or losses caused by another, you may be entitled to compensation. Gingras Thompson & Wachs has over 35 years of experience in handling car accident cases. Their team of personal injury attorneys is dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
Hey guys, this is Sage from Civic Media. Are you a small business struggling to get the word out? 1260 AM Lake Air is here to help. For a limited time, apply for a $200 grant and receive $1,000 worth of free advertising. Your $200 investment becomes $1,200 with this grant. That's right, you heard correctly. Get your business notice without breaking the bank. Visit civicmedia.us or call 608-949-8989. That's 608-949-8989 for more information. Don't miss out on this amazing opportunity.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, Did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Yeah, gonna get to the whole Trump circus. Gonna get to all of that. Gonna get thoughts on the Trump defense. All of it. Trust me, we will not go through the program without bringing up something about Donald Trump's crimes. I guarantee you. But I gotta start here because this shows how broken our system is. Look, we got a lot of problems in this country, a lot of problems. So where do Republicans spend their time in the House? Where do they prioritize their time? Well, yesterday the Republicans in the House Appropriations Committee, they've adopted a new funding bill. They've adopted some new amendments to funding our VA. And what is that? Well, sorry, no gender-affirming care. No, can't do that. And no abortions. No, can't do that. And, oh, just to add a little sprinkles on top, a little glitter, if you will, they're going to ban the rainbow flag. No, children cannot have rainbow flags. And you go, do you have nothing better to do? Is this a huge problem at the VA? Is this happening a lot? Are there a lot of soldiers seeking gender-affirming care? And if there are they not of sufficient age to make decisions? You know, they did defend the Constitution after all. Should not all protections be, I don't know, available to them? Evidently not. But, you know, again, not surprising that our Republican friends are going to waste our time, waste our days, all the while, you know, pointing fingers at Democrats for not getting anything done. Also today, the fun little bit, they're going to go after Adam Schiff. And I found this interesting that 20 Republicans, I found it interesting, there were 20 Republicans with some bit of courage to say, what? You're going to sue Adam Schiff for what was it? I think it was $16 million because he had the audacity to investigate Trump's crimes. The audacity, how dare they? How dare they? How dare they do their job? And this is one of those things where you just go, at some point, don't Democrats have to you know, just come out and say, look at these clowns. Look at this clown show. It should not even be, 2024 shouldn't even be a race. Working people should be watching what Republicans are doing in the House and watching what they're doing in state houses across this country and going, why? How is this making our lives better? How is this putting food on the table, lowering the cost of education for our kids? How is this going to put gas in the gas tank? How is this going to do any of those things? And it's not. So while, you know, the Republicans are over here doing dumb stuff, I happen to come across this Oxfam report. that looks at, you know, where we stand in the world, where workers stand. It's titled "Where Hard Work Doesn't Pay Off." And they go through and they look at all of the 38 countries that are on this list. They look at the worker policies, like, you know, wage policies like minimum wage, unemployment. They look at worker protections like equal pay, you know, protections on the job, occupational stuff, protections from sexual harassment, parental leave, all kinds of things like that. They look at the right to organize. Is there harassment in the workplace? They look at collective bargaining rights. They look at the right to strike. They look at all of these things, sectorial bargaining, and they compile this stuff. And the top 10 countries, and I don't think there'll be much surprise, we're not in it. I know a lot of people have to thump the chest. We're number one. No. No, we are not. Slovenia, number one. Slovenia, number one. Followed by Sweden, France, Portugal, Italy, Iceland, Denmark, the Netherlands, Finland, and Norway. You know, we're not number one. Not even close to number one. You know how far not close to number one we are? How far down this list? Let me put it this way. At least Colombia, Costa Rica, Mexico, South Korea, and Chile are below us. We're tied with Turkey for 32nd. Again, we're number one. Not so much. And this is where, again, I come back to the moment that we had better have politicians really out there thumping for working class priorities. Thumping on how to get the working class back on the side of Democrats. Conservative Democrats, oh, fine. You know, moderate Republicans, great. You know, but bringing workers back to the Democratic Party by pursuing policies that are going to help workers. I mean, that's the reality. We already know what this is. And we found this out when we did our Working Class Heroes tour last year, when we went into solidly red areas and started talking about, you know, what about good wage jobs? What about strong unions? What about health care? What about all of these things that Democrats used to stand for and still do? They got to get out there and fight for them, though. They got to get out there and stop with the extreme stuff. Stop with stop. Bread and butter. It's about the kitchen table. And on the divisive stuff, somebody says, well, what about abortion? Well, abortion, the majority of the country is with us on abortion. Safe and legal. I say it all the time. I'm not pro-abortion. I'm pro-safety. I don't want my daughters dying in an alley. But we should be moving to policies that make people want to bring children into this world. That's where Democratic policy should be hammering. The polling is overwhelmingly on the side of abortion being legal. But it's got to look like Democrats, and look, this is because there's a media imbalance. Republicans have control of all of the right-wing media that they got. Massive. In fact, a little tooting of the horn today. We were included in Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100. We were included in one of the top 100 talk shows in the country. And I went through to see how many people would be, I don't know, center-left-ish. And out of the 100, maybe 10? And this is where you go, there's an imbalance in talking to people. And it's something we got to do an awful lot more of, and on issues that are important to working people. To me, it's that simple. And we've got to highlight idiot politicians like Robin Voss, the Speaker of the Wisconsin House. You know, on the abortion issue, he said, you know, think how many Americans would be alive if our workforce, doing things to make America great if we hadn't had easy abortion access. He's basically saying we need kids, we need more people for cheap labor. That's it. You know, we just need to. It's the old Tom DeLay thing from a number of years back. And you go, okay, well, what policies would you do to help encourage people to want to have children? Well, you know, another statement of his is, as long as I'm speaker, Wisconsin will never expand Medicaid. You go, but wait a second. It doesn't matter. It's all about the anger. It's all about the division. And this is where we better come around to how do we rebuild and revitalize the working class? Democrats, I hope you're paying attention. There's an opportunity here to grab back what was once yours. So today on the program, we no screener. I'm still suffering from COVID, so I have quarantined my studio, which means no screener. We're gonna take calls, and when I say, hey caller, what's your name? What's on your mind? Please listen to the phone, not to the radio, and jump right in. So let's go. Let's who we got on line one. What's your name? What's on your mind?
Mark from Wisconsin. But it's amazing that the Republicans didn't mention banning Rainbow Land song by Dolly Parton, and Miley Cyrus even going as far as to ban the Rainbow Connection song by Kermit the Frog from the 1979 movie The Muppet Connection. I mean,
I'm with you. That's amazing. You just gave them an idea. Congratulations.
It's just remarkable that what they are freaking out about when it should be just a matter of course, accept people for what they are.
Yep.
And how many of these Republicans are just closeted, and Lindsey Graham, I'm talking about you, but yet they go on the attack of gay people and trans people, and it just, why are the percentage, because especially for trans people, the percentages of that are so low.
Yep.
But why are they so concerned about it?
Well, because it's divisive. I mean, it's something that they know is going to pit us against each other. It's something that they know that can, you know, the old Jay Gould quote, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. This is what this is. This is that red meat to get you and me at each other's throats.
It is just ridiculous that, I know, that one of my stepsons happens to be gay, but that's just, that's just the way it is. It didn't make me think any less of him. In fact, once he'd accepted his sexuality, he was doing better in school and was actually became active in trying to establish some chapters in the school about a chapter in the school. They're defending, LGBT rights. I mean, it's whatever should make you happy. And that's supposedly the pursuit of happiness is supposed to be core to the American identity.
No, it's the founding of this country, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And they specifically chose happiness over property for a reason. And that's why I love to point that out. We have the right to pursue our happiness. As long as what you do doesn't infringe on me, we're golden. And this is one of those issues, in my view.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous because they'd like to say, well, they didn't mean happiness, they meant happenstance. What you're saying is pursuit of wealth. And that's just nonsense. They said happiness. And they knew what they're talking about, said happiness. I mean, it just is. And that's what I got for tonight.
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for the conversation, brother.
Good stuff. Thanks for the call. Actually, again, this is where we need to be having these conversations. Because look, I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not a rainbow flag waving, out in the streets marching, pride person. I'm not. And I don't have to be. And the majority of us don't have to be. But if you want to be, knock yourself out. And as I said yesterday, what I would really love to see at these pride rallies are a whole bunch of people who look like they're just going to work. Doctors and lawyers and teachers and just regular average, your neighbors showing up in sweatpants and a t-shirt. So that maybe we don't have to have his stepson starting groups to help protect others. Maybe we don't have to have groups. Maybe it's just, we don't care what you do in the confines of your four walls with consenting adults. Maybe we get to a place where we don't have to have these conversations because, you know what? You have the right to do whatever you want. As long as your rights don't infringe on others, it shouldn't matter. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So all over the social media today, the Fox Chiron got people's attention because as was floating under the image of Biden giving a speech and Trump doing whatever he was doing, it read on screen, "Wannabe dictator speaks at the White House after having his political rival arrested." And you go, that's not reality. That's not honest. That's not factual. It's not fair. It's not none of that. And in fact, Fox even issued a statement that the Chiron was taken down immediately and that it was addressed. I don't know how it was addressed, but that's according to The Hill, that they did take it down immediately, but not before, millions of people saw it. And just so people are on the same page, Joe Biden did not indict Donald Trump. Biden didn't do it. The Democratic Party didn't do it. Democrats didn't do it. There wasn't a politician who did this. It was a grand jury of regular, average, everyday Florida residents. Florida residents. Can I say that again? Florida residents indicted Donald Trump. 23 residents of Miami. They did it. Not Merrick Garland, not Jack Smith, not Kamala Harris, not the left, not the libs, not the media. No, 23 people from Miami who took time off of being on the beach to save the country. So if you want to blame someone, it's pretty simple. Pretty simple. You blame the criminal. We used to think like this. As a country, we used to blame people who did bad things. And I remember that guy, Beretta. It was a TV show. I know a lot of people not old enough to remember. But Beretta, you can't do the crime. Time, don't do the crime. It's simple. Now, here's the funny thing. You've got Lindsey Graham, who has said that he's warning the special counsel that if he indicts Donald Trump on anything in D.C., that January 6th stuff, oh, there's going to be the wagging of the finger. And my mind goes this place. I can't help but think, what would John McCain say of his buddy Lindsey Graham? It's one of those things. He's got to be rolling in the grave. But let's go to the phones. What's your name and what's on your mind?
This is Jack from Merrimack, Wisconsin.
Jack, how are you today? What's on your mind, brother?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, talking about wannabe dictators, there's only one, and that's the one that clearly, if you listen to the evidence at the January 6th Commission hearings that were public, he clearly fomented both violent and political attempted coups on this country. And the second thing I have to say is this is just a wonderful case of them, opposition using the philosophy of, I believe it was Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's minister of propaganda, who said, accuse the other side of that of which you are guilty.
Yep. So, no, you can even bring it here to the U.S. LBJ once said that he wanted to accuse an opponent of having sex with a bull just to hear him deny it. This kind of stuff works. And it's up to us to get through it and put it where it belongs, in the trash bin. But at the end of the day, Trump is charged appropriately, in my view. But I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
I got to get to an email. Bill sends me this email. Said, Rick, you pointed out that you need to point out that Trump's resume would not get him a job at union busting Starbucks. And he goes on the list, Trump by the numbers. 2 impeachments, 2 indictments, 71 charges. felony charges between Manhattan DA and DOJ cases, over 300 classified documents stolen from the White House, 154,000 manufacturing jobs lost during Trump's 4 years, almost 3 million jobs total lost during Trump's term, 2,868,519 votes behind Hillary Clinton, 7,060,347 votes behind Joe Biden, 10 million votes behind Democrats in two elections, and more to come. The name of the loser. Let's go to the phones. What's your name? What's on your mind?
Hey, Rick, it's Alice.
Alice!
So, what I wanted to say was, the actions of the lunatics, you know, performing their little fox outrage is nothing more than performance art, because, you know, we got to keep the base stirred up. And if you really look, and I was sitting there thinking about this earlier today, the entire Republican Party, their platform and everything is based on fantasy.
Yep.
Everything's based on fantasy.
Well, it's based on the narrative that they're the victim.
Right. They're the victims, but everything that they put out is a fantasy. You know, Joe Biden did this. Well, it's a lie, so we can file that under fantasy. Trump is this fantastic, successful billionaire. Again, fantasy. I mean, it's they keep pushing this narrative, we're the victims because we wanted to take away your rights and you fought back and wouldn't let us. So you took and you caused us harm. I mean, everything is a fantasy and a victimization.
Yep.
It's just insane.
I'm right there with you. Appreciate the thoughts.
Have a good evening.
Good stuff. Bill in Santa Fe sent me an email, said, well, what's Trump's defense going to be? Simply, his defense is going to be, I had every right to do it. It's the only one he can really go with. I was the president. I had the right to do it. That's I think, going to be his best defense. Now, he will spaghetti theory this to the umpteenth degree. It was everybody else's fault. I'm the victim. Poor, pitiful me. And there's not going to be really a plan. It's just going to be whatever grabs people's attention at that day. We are going to be inundated with, it's all Joe Biden. It's all, you know, go on. It's the DOJ. It's Merrick Garland. It's, you know, it's the hot dog vendor on the corner. You know, it's the person who came and scrubbed the toilet. You know, I got to tell you, the one thing that's shocking to me, and this is, I digress, the picture of the presidential library in Mar-a-Lago, I got to be honest, I really thought there would have been a golden toilet. I thought that would have been a golden throne to the master himself. That would have, I got to question if that's really his bathroom. It's, wow. We are just in one of these moments. Now, here's the thing, and this is what we're going to get a lot of. It's a lot of dueling narratives. Trump's attorney came out and said that the targeting prosecution of a leading political opponent is the type of thing that you see in dictatorships like Cuba and Venezuela. So they're going over there. Anything you do to hold someone accountable, that's tin pot dictatorship, and it's all bad. And then the other part of it is you got Trump coming out and said, if he wins, he's going to appoint a real special prosecutor to go after the most corrupt president in the history of the United States, Joe Biden and the entire Joe Biden family. And you go, projection much? And the answer, yeah. I mean, because this is all he's been. There's nothing new here. Now, Sally sent me an email, and Sally doesn't say where she's from, but she points out that she said, Rick, you were the first person I heard say Trump was a child and the result of poor parenting. Yes, I did say that. She said, I read Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, say almost the same thing today in the Washington Post. Not quite the same thing, but he said, you know, Trump is scared you know whatless. Because for the first time, and this is where the similarities is, for the first time ever, Trump is going to be held accountable. There's no backstop for him in this. And as Kelly said, you know, he projects this strength. He projects when he's He's worried. He's attacking. That is the Trump MO. So we're going to see it. We got a cornered rat right now. And we better be careful, because these people do not believe in democracy. They don't give a tinker's damn about the Constitution, you, your families, me, nothing. They care about themselves, and they're going to do everything they can to protect themselves. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day John L. Lewis called miners who worked for Little Steel Coal subsidiaries out on strike. It was an act of solidarity as conditions worsened on steel strike picket lines. The walkout was designed to force the closure of steel mills by stopping the flow of coal. 10,000 workers in as many as 19 mines owned by Republic Steel, Bethlehem Steel, and Youngstown Sheet and Tube dropped their tools. Bethlehem had not been one of the independent steel companies initially included in the Little Steel Strike, but workers at its Cambria Works in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, walked out in sympathy with railroad workers at Bethlehem-owned Blacklick and Connemaw Railroad. They had been refused a contract. Striking miners in Johnstown marched to Cambria Works to join the 7-mile stretch of picket lines. In Ohio, the Canton Federation of Labor voted unanimously for a general strike if the newly formed Citizens League attempted to force reopening of the steel mills. SWAC leader Van Bittner threatened to call out another 600,000 miners by week's end if the strike was not settled. John L. Lewis remarked, quote, "Labor is menaced by the force of arms of Republic Steel Corporation. Labor is calling attention to this situation so the law, government, or public opinion can begin functioning before another massacre takes place." UAW President Homer Martin added, quote, "It is our purpose to spread the light of democracy to every part of this land until autocracy and industrial slavery have been driven from the country." But Johnstown civic leaders and town officials had formed a citizens' committee and prepared for battle as the miners approached. It seemed there was no end to the anti-strike violence. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
As Scottish literary giant Robert Burns wrote, "The best laid schemes of mice and men go oft awry." His 1785 poem, titled To a Mouse, could be directed today at the right-wing sloganeers who've been scheming so furiously to turn their hokey woke snobbery into a winning political stratagem. "Your local librarian is woke," they screech. "So is Disney, Inc., some of your churches, too, plus all Democrats, and oh my God, even Bud Light." Creeping wokeism is the new Red Scare, Welfare Queen and Willie Horton political bugaboos rolled into one, forming the main, quote, issue of Republicans now running for president, Congress, and dog catcher. But rather than getting defensive, insisting you are not woke, consider firing back by saying, "Of course I'm woke." For the great majority of Americans, being woke is a very positive characteristic, meaning you're awake, attentive to what's going on. Indeed, in black communities, stay woke has long meant staying alert to racial and social injustices. But even some Republicans must consider it bizarrely self-defeating for their party's top candidates to be urging voters to go to sleep. GOP leaders explain that anti-woke means crusading against DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusiveness. But wait, that means they're opposing America itself. For we are a nation united under the essential principle of e pluribus unum, as affirmed by everything from the Declaration of Independence to our kindergarten teachings of sharing and fairness. Ours is a country rooted in constant diversification, expanding equality, and the democratic idea that every voice ought to be included. Our country needs more of all three. This is Jim Hightower saying America is way short of achieving these historic ideals, but shame on those demanding we abandon even striving for them. Confront the charlatans.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, this week, some things to look out for this week. If you're someone who gets a lot of packages delivered to your house, could be an interesting couple of months. This Friday, the Teamsters are getting their members, their UPS members, to vote on a strike authorization vote. I expect it to be very high, somewhere in the 95 to 99% range, way up there. And because, look, you know, this is something that Sean O'Brien ran on. They're gonna make that the job of the future. They're gonna help raise the working class up by making sure that those jobs pay, especially at a company that's as wildly profitable as UPS is. And here to share some thoughts on what the authorization vote might look like, and what we're hearing about the negotiations, what little is being leaked out. That's why I've asked Michael Sonato to come talk with us. Michael's a labor reporter over at the Guardian U.S. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick, as always.
So, let's start with the authorization vote. Any idea where this is going to go? You agree with me somewhere between 95, 97, 98%?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Sean O'Brien took over the Teamsters kind of running on this. You know, I've covered the anticipation of this. There's been a lot of organizing within the Teamsters union, fighting for this contract, and there's been some really big sticking points. And, you know, one of the biggest of all is, you know, like you said, how profitable UPS has been for the duration of the current contract through the pandemic. You know, UPS workers, we're working through it. We're not, you know, being called heroes by management while they're pocketing, you know, $12-13 billion a year in profits.
Yep.
You know, the CEO, it's like 27, you know, in the 20s of millions of dollars a year. Those same kinds of pay increases weren't going to the workers. And, you know, there's a lot of issues. So locals have been holding their strike votes, you know, the past week and a half. I think we're expecting the results to come out Friday. You know, I think at the earliest. I agree with your assessment. I think it's going to be overwhelming. A lot of participation in the vote, and I think it's going to be overwhelmingly in favor of authorizing it. And so we're about 45 days now until the contract expires, and the Teamsters have made it. If you go 1 second past the contract expiration without a tentative agreement in place, they're going to walk out on the job.
Yeah.
If that happens, it's going to be one of the biggest strikes in U.S. history. 340,000 workers all around the U.S. It's a big deal. And from workers I've been talking to, this is on the company. You know, share the profits. They did reach a tentative agreement on a big deal, which was UPS trucks have no air conditioners right now in them. And with the climate getting hotter, and you know how hot those trucks can get, back of the truck, they have, you know, workers have had their temperatures, they've clocked like upwards of, you know, I spoke with one out in California. She said she's clocked 150, and the thermometer doesn't go past that in the back of the truck. They're ovens, basically. They're old, and all they're given are these little desk fans for the front of the car. It doesn't really do anything.
And they've also got wind. In UPS's defense, there's also a window. I mean, this is how crazy this sounds. That in this day and age, at this moment, where you cannot find a vehicle on the road that doesn't have air conditioning, you cannot buy a car in this country that has rolled down freaking windows. There's still vehicles on the road doing essential work in this country where the person driving it is sweating their you-know-whats off. And in several cases, people have died from heat exposure while driving these vehicles. It's mind-blowing to me that they don't have it. And look, I remember, you know, the freight contract that I was a part of years ago where we got air conditioning in the trucks. That was like 25, 30 years ago. How is it UPS has not been able to do this just in buying new vehicles, saying the new vehicles are going to have them? How is that possible other than they don't give a rat's behind about their workers?
Yeah, I think it was getting to that point where, I think this issue is picking up similar to what rail workers were fighting for with sick days and you know, since then they've started, the unions have been able to get some sick days, not what they're looking for since Biden stopped them from being able to strike this past December. But I think it was a really, you know, big issue.
Now you bring that up.
It was a big issue last summer. Yeah.
Now you bring Biden up, you bring him into this, and a lot of people really, you know, ticked at Biden about getting involved in that rail strike. And I argue that I never thought there was going to be a strike. I think they could have handled the sick days better. I think there's a lot there. Does Biden get involved if there's a strike here at UPS? Because this would be a major disruptor to our economy. Could UPS and FedEx and other entities pick up the slack?
Obviously, I think there would be big consequences for, you know, UPS and businesses that rely on them and whatnot. They've made it abundantly clear the ball is in the court of management of the company. Like, you have the time. They've been very straightforward with what they're asking for. The air conditioners, that's been solved at this point. One of the biggest things that hasn't at this point is they have a two-tiered system right now, where part-time workers at UPS, they're getting paid, you know, $15 an hour or right around there, and they're doing the same kind of work as full-timers. And an issue with that as well is during like peak seasons where they need those part-timers to fill in for the demand, or like the summer when things pick up and they have to cover like vacation time, they get, you know, a couple dollars more depending on just like the market. It's called like a market rate adjustment. And then they take it away as soon as they don't need them as much. I think that's a big thing right now, is the full-timers want to see wage increases that are commensurate with how profitable UPS has been, which $12-13 billion the past few years. During the pandemic, they didn't get any bonuses, hero pay, or anything like that. Part-timers, you know, I did a story last year, part-timers got wage cuts because UPS decided.
I was going to bring that up. You know, here locally where I live, there are a couple of UPS facilities, and they were paying the inside people, the part-timers, the people who load and unload the trucks, they were paying them $24 an hour over the 14 or 15 of whatever the normal rate is. And just on one day, arbitrarily, just snapped it back. And you go, is that not on some level wage theft? Is that on some level, aren't you supposed to give several months? You got hired in at $24 an hour. Now you go, well, they could quit or they could do all this other stuff. But it just seemed, one, arbitrary, two, unfair, and three, just plain mean. Especially as you point out, this is a massively profitable company who's done billions of dollars in stock buybacks, let alone all the dividends and things they've given out to shareholders. So they've got the money. It's just a matter of them not wanting to give it up.
Yeah, exactly. And, these things have been kind of brewing over the past few years. And I'm sure you remember the last UPS contract 5 years ago under Hoffa. Workers kind of wanted to strike, and that leadership kind of shoved the agreement down the workers' throats and said, you rejected the agreement, but we're going to pass it anyways. And I think that kind of catalyzed the change of leadership we saw. And, you know, obviously with Sean O'Brien taking over, he's been a lot more aggressive and kind of, you know, in my opinion, a little bit more in tune with the rank and file of what workers have been asking for. Yeah. The pandemic pissed them off. It pissed off, I think, every worker in this country. I think, you know, those things have kind of built a kind of like, you know, camaraderie that I don't think has been at UPS in a long time with workers in different sections that, typically, you know, full-timers and haven't really cared about the part-timers. But yep, Now that's kind of, it's a big issue in moving the company forward and growing the Teamsters. And another thing is UPS has a bad reputation with contracting work out away from Teamsters members, and their demands is that needs to end. You need to bring it back to Teamsters, or the people that are doing that work, make them Teamsters, make them part of the union. Stop exploiting these like little loopholes to cut labor costs and pad the pockets
outsourcing everything. You're right. You're that's in a number of places as well, and I'm glad O'Brien's taking this on. But I had an old timer a number of years ago tell me, Michael, nothing that brings people together like a strike. And I remember the UPS strike back in 97. And I remember how huge that was, how much it hit the economy, and how they came and got some of the things that they wanted. The UPS people I'm talking to, they're full for bear. They want to strike. And this is where I keep coming back. UPS has got to come to the table with something to quash that want. Because I think O'Brien's kind of put himself in a position where he's saying, well, if we don't get what we want, our people are ready to go. I think people are ready to go. So he better bring back something that's gonna tap that down, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think we've seen the past couple of years, workers are, I think, a little bit more, they have the appetite to want to strike and want to demand these things. And the inequality is, abhorrent. Workers are the ones that are dealing with, inflation and the rising costs and getting, price gouged and, wage theft, right and left, all these different culminating issues. I think the public is in a big support. I think, with talking, going back to the railroad workers, I don't think the bosses anticipated how much public support would be for those workers and the outrage the continuance of that. I think when we saw that a few months ago with East Palestine, where those residents are still suffering from what happened there.
No, you're absolutely right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Michael Sonato. Michael's a labor reporter over at The Guardian. If you want to check out the work that he does, we'll get links out on social media. You can check that out. I want to change gears a little bit and ask you about this Oxfam report titled Where Hard Work Doesn't Pay Off. Because we like to think that we're number one. I mean, you look at these UPS jobs. For some, these are really good jobs. Even for the part-timers, they're not bad. They have health care and they are good part-time jobs. They could be much better, and I'm hoping that they make them better. But, I'm looking at this Oxfam report and just showing me this idea that, how we like to thump our chests and say we're number one, we're not anywhere close to number one. In fact, according to this report, we're tied for 32nd with Turkey. And I guess, for you and me, this is old hat. We know this stuff. But the average working person, I don't think, understands just how far working people in this country are behind their peers in other countries.
No, I don't think it's talked about enough. It's certainly, not brought up in schools how, in that the report kind of like points out the U.S. is the bottom of, they based it on the 38, economically developed countries. U.S. is on the bottom of the barrel when it comes to worker protections, organizing, union rights. We have a terrible unionization rate. England has, 23, 24%. That's more than double of what we have, and it's been declining in the U.S. Italy, where my father's from, it's like 50% or, 30%. All over Europe, it's like large sections. In the U.S., 11%, and a lot of that is just public sector workers. It's abysmal, and it just kind of like paints a picture of just how bleak things are with just how deregulation and
all of it, the whole neoliberal agenda, Michael, the deregulation, the privatization, the tax code, the hooray for me, all of that stuff has created this environment where the wealthy are doing great. And look, those policies are working exactly. Free trade, open borders, all that stuff working exactly as it was supposed to, making the rich richer and us, we the working people, much poorer. So the question I keep coming back to is, how do we get working people to understand that they're getting screwed? And that we stop worrying about what people are doing in their bedrooms or doing in the bathroom stall next to you and worry about how bad you're getting robbed daily.
I think we both kind of asked to maybe a varying question of that every day in terms of like how do we fix
every day. The
and yeah, like we're bottom of the barrel on all these things when it comes to workers and wages in the working class, and we have the most billionaires. We're the wealthiest country in the world, but we don't have basic social safety nets or services or things like affordable, free healthcare every other country that in that report basically has it. We don't like all every sort of barometer in terms of services.
Unemployment, wages, protections on the job, paid leave, sick leave, vacations, you name it, we're at the bottom of it. But because that's where Americans, we're Americans, damn it. We work hard.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think the whole Horatio Alger myth that kind of propagated in the early 1900s with the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, that's kind of embedded in American culture and the American psyche. And it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of reckoning to kind of peel back and start reversing some of these troubling trends that we've been
It's going to take us winning one strike at a time, and I'm hoping this UPS thing moves us in that direction. I'm hoping the workers that we see at Starbucks and Amazon and all across this country coming back to the idea that we should be caring about our fellow workers, the idea rediscovering the concept of solidarity and a prosperous working class. These are themes that I hope we're finally getting back to, Michael, but it's guys like you who are out there doing the good work of educating and reporting, and I appreciate it. Thanks so much, and I look forward to having you come back again anytime soon.
Of course, anytime. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much. Michael Sonata, labor reporter over at The Guardian. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at RickSmithShow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come on, talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. During that summer, the battle waged over the efforts to unionize the southwestern West Virginia coal mines. The miners had been evicted from their company homes and had established tent colonies. One was located at Lick Creek. On this fateful day, state police and company gun thugs raided the Lick Creek camp. The police claimed that members of the tent colony had been shooting at strikebreakers. They arrested 56 men and destroyed the tents and furniture in the camp. One striker was shot down and killed. Later that summer, at their convention in Matewan, West Virginia, the delegates of the United Mine Workers of America adopted a resolution condemning the action. The attack on the tent colony was included in a list of grievances against the mine owners. It described the attack as one of the most brutal murders ever committed in the history of our state by the state police and deputies. Composed of the Baldwin-Felts detectives was the attack on the Lick Creek tent colony on June 14, 1921, in which our brother, Alex Breadlove, willfully murdered by the state police while his hands were uplifted and begging for God to have mercy on his soul. The resolution went on to condemn the atrocities against the miners and demand the federal government and governor of West Virginia to restore law to the local police forces.
The resolution was sent to the President of the United States, West Virginia's Governor Morgan, and the officials of the American Federation of Labor. It was also sent to Labor and other newspapers.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I got to tell you, I'm hoping that a strike can be averted at UPS. I've said before, no one really wins in a strike, and we want to make sure that it's the last arrow in the quiver. And you know, I've said this a number of times, but at the end of the day, if you're not getting what you need, if you're not getting what you earn, maybe you got to take that out. Let's go to the phones. What's your name? What's on your mind?
Am I on,
yep,
Rick?
Go.
Yeah, okay, Rick. You know what the conservatives would say, Rick? They would say, well, how come everybody wants to try to get in here if we're at number 31 or 32 or whatever it was? So that would be the pushback. If it's so bad here, why are they trying to come here?
Yeah, but these are the 38 38 OECD, the economic, the developed countries. The other 170? Those are the people trying to get her. And look, Mexico is below us on this list, so they're trying to make their lives better too. But here's the thing. Why would we want to compare ourselves to the most desperate on this planet? Shouldn't we be better than that?
Yes, I agree, Rick. Spot on.
All right, good stuff. Anything else?
No, you're doing a hell of a job, and keep up the good work. I learn so much every night.
I appreciate
it. Great.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Great stuff. But this is one of these moments where you go, at some point, do we not demand better? At some point, do we not demand all across, not just at UPS? Because, look, UPS is a wildly profitable corporation. Wildly profitable. And they've been able to abuse that two-tier system for a while. They've been able to divide the workplace between the people who are driving the package cars, which is a tough job. Most people in this country could never do that. Could never drive that truck, especially in major cities, with the heat and the weather and the conditions and all of that. And then you've got the people who are inside, the people who work, you know, 3-4 hours a night. 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, the 2 o'clock to 5 or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning shift for $15 an hour. And they do that because maybe they can get one of those package jobs. When I was a kid, that's how you got those package car driving jobs. You started off throwing boxes inside, at which when I was a younger man, now we're going back years, they didn't have the technology that they have today. But when I was throwing boxes at UPS, they wanted 1,200 boxes an hour coming out of the back of that truck. And a supervisor would stand at the back of your truck with a stopwatch. And they would periodically come by and they would count how many boxes were rolling out off those rollers. And you better be moving at that 1,200 boxes. This is one of those things where these people work their butts off. They make this company huge amounts of money and they earn. I never say the word deserve. They earn every penny that they're demanding. And this is where the rest of us should be saying, you know what? Remember that idea, that concept of reward for work? That if you work hard, you play by the rules, you get ahead? This is one of those things. When you've got a CEO making, what, $27 gazillion? In fact, Michael didn't share the story that he told me off air of talking to the spokesman for UPS saying, well, you know, they don't need air conditioning. They've got fans. Tell me you've never been in one of those trucks without actually telling me you've never been in one. Because I know hundreds of people who do that job. I've been in that truck. I know how bad it is. I know how ergonomically not good it is. In fact, cracked my head open on one of them one time. So this is an opportunity to make that job just that much better. But not just that job.
And this is why everyone should care about this. The idea of workers having some power to say, you know what, we demand a portion of what we create. That idea that Republicans used to believe of a meritocracy. This is that. So
you're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.